Every day, families with critically ill children face the unthinkable, being far from home while their child receives life-saving medical care. Ronald McDonald House Charities Bay Area steps in to ease this burden, providing no-cost housing, free meals, and comprehensive support services to families whose children are being treated at the Bay Area's leading children's hospitals, including Lucile Packard Children's Hospital Stanford and UCSF Benioff Children's Hospitals in San Francisco and Oakland. But we can't do it alone. Your support, through donations or volunteering, helps families stay close to each other and the expert care they need. Visit rmhcbayarea.org to learn how you can make a lasting impact.
You're listening to the Sharks Audio Network. Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
After General Manager Mike Greer's post-trade deadline press conference, I sat down with Dan Rusinowski, Randy Hahn, and Drew Remenda to discuss the team's flurry of deadline activity. All right, deadline day 2025. It's coming past the San Jose Sharks. Very, very active today. Perhaps surprising everyone once again at the end with the trade of Fabian Zetterlund. Randy, I'll flash back and start with you to a year ago when we talked about the teardown being complete with the trade of Tomas Hertl. This was a little bit different. I guess, Randy, what was your reaction and were you expecting a deadline as busy as it has been for San Jose?
Well, I expected the UFAs, the guys on expiring contracts like Sturm and Cunnan and players like that to be in play, and they certainly did move. I didn't expect the Vanecek trade. Great for Vitek that he gets an opportunity to be in the playoffs. And Jake Walman and Fabian Zetterlund both surprised me, and Zetterlund was even more surprising. But now that we've heard Mike Greer talk about the thinking, it's less of a surprise and more understandable, but I totally get the shock from the fans of a player that they had become emotionally invested in because of his play and his enthusiasm and his charisma and everything else. But I guess when you refer back to a year ago and us maybe saying the teardown, if you want to call it, was complete, I don't think you're ever complete until you're pushing, you're knocking on the playoff door. And then once you get there, it's never complete until you win. I mean, look at what's gone on around the league today with teams that are near the top and wanting to get to the top. So it's an emotional day. I'm not gonna lie. We are closer to these players than even the fans are. And to see Zetterlund, Walman, Cunnan, Sturm, Vanecek, Granlund before that, Blackwood before that, it's been a draining year because you build up relationships and friendships, and we get excited on the air about these players, and now they're gone. And we have to get re-excited about what's to come, but that at this point are just names on a piece of paper for the most part. So it's a tough day.
Dan, I'll go to you. One of the comments that Mike Greer said with regards to Fabian Zetterlund was talking about how, you know, he didn't line up as much with where the Sharks were currently, and talked about him being at a point in his career where he could go be in a playoff chase. You know, with Mike saying that, it feels like that is him going all in on the youth players. And you could expound upon that to include a Jake Walman, who's a little bit older as well. But when we're talking about the core future of the Sharks right now, we're talking about those 23 and under guys who were all contributors in 8 points the other night in a win. But that really seems to be where he's doubling down right now, outside of a few veterans like a Tyler Toffoli, for instance.
You know, I think it's partly related to what he was saying about the way that the young kids, Celebrini and Sturm and Mukha Madulin and Graf, are developing. And I think that what he wants to do is to maximize the number of the people in the similar age group. Zetterlund did surprise me, without question. I thought that he would be part of that. But again, as Randy said, listening to some of the reasoning, it probably makes sense. Walman didn't surprise me as much for that reason. He obviously was a good contributor to this team this year. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe he might stick around a little bit longer. But because of the progress that they see and because of what they understand is a very talented group of young players coming in that we haven't even seen yet, I think that they're just preparing for all of that, making sure that their salary cap numbers are right for when those guys do start to get paid a lot more money. And I think that's a good sign in the long term. It just hurts right now. It hurts on a variety of levels simply because as Randy said, you get an investment in some of these guys. You start to see their progress. You start to really root for them. And all of a sudden, they're not members of your team anymore. And so you have to get through the emotional part of that. We've been through it a number of times before. And, you know, this teardown, so to speak, is not over. They're still trying to get that group of people crystallized in that maybe 2 to 3 year age group where they're going to be really outstanding. And I just talked to people in Colorado the other day, and they're telling me how very, I don't want to say intimidated, but how impressed they are with the group of young players that the Sharks have. So when the Athletic rated the team the number one group of prospects, it wasn't just newspaper guys doing it. It was a group of people that are involved in the game that really respect what the Sharks have. And I think Mike wants to maximize that.
Drew, one of the things I immediately thought of with the Zetterlund trade was how it would impact a guy like William Eklund and also Will Smith, who he appeared to be tight with. You know, you as the one man here who's been on the coaching side of things, can you immediately feel that impact in the dressing room, even though we all know these are professionals, they're used to dealing with these types of situations?
Yes, you can. Because Mike mentioned it, Mike Greer mentioned it when we were on the conference call with him, that on the other side of it, the players in Colorado, in Dallas, in Florida, they can feel like, oh my goodness, look at this, look what we've gone. And you know that your general manager has gone out to try to help you push for a Stanley Cup. So you feel it on the positive side. You definitely feel it on the negative side. There will be guys in there like our fans who were going, what are we doing? I thought we were through this. You said short-term pain. Well, the short-term pain is becoming longer because this really hurts. And as Randy and Danny said, for some of the guys, I don't know if you guys know this or not, but I was a pretty big fan of Nico Sturm. I think I mentioned him once or twice in a broadcast. I was literally, I still am, sad. But Mike said also, and I thought this was key, and I wondered if this was a point, whether the record this year is far from what they thought it was going to be, so that necessitated them being open for business to, as Danny said and Randy said, to keep the moving some pieces out. I'm not going to say teardown, because no. the teardown was the teardown.
Yeah, the big now, money deal.
Move people in, move people out, and try to continue to build. And maybe the first blueprint hasn't worked the way you wanted it to, so you have to redo a few things here and there. But I think that was, to me, my biggest takeaway is what Mike said, that the record wasn't what they thought it was going to be this year, and the wins weren't there as much, and that opened them for business, which is understandable.
Right.
It certainly is understandable.
Randy, when Mike was asked about the potential to be aggressive in the offseason, whether it be free agency or trades or however he's going to work this, that was not the term he agreed with, but he knows they have to be active. I guess, what are you expecting in terms of how he goes about his business in the offseason? Because I think one way or another, he has to populate this roster with NHL players. And he even said that he thought that this was going to be the last time they were going through this, which I thought was maybe a little bit more insight into where he thought the team was going as opposed to the term aggressive.
Yeah. Well, I think going into today, and you know, a lot has shifted here in the last 5 or 6 hours, but I think going into today, the Sharks were projected to be $20 million below the floor for next season over this summer. So that much minimum is going to be spent on players in order to get the Sharks compliant with the salary cap at the bottom end. So there's going to be additions. There's going to be more players that are going to fill out this roster to make it a more competitive roster. But, you know, I just think that if winning the Stanley Cup is the end of the third period of a hockey game, I think we're still in the first period. I think hopefully we're getting to the end of the first period. But we're not at the end of the first period yet. We are last in the NHL. We are 32nd. We were 32nd last year. So there, as to Drew's point about them expecting more this year, I think more was expected. Now you could say, well, as soon as you traded Mackenzie Blackwood, that changed things considerably in December. And it did. I think the Sharks have only won seven games since then. This team is what it is. And I, in my view, your best players are 18. The best player in the organization is 18. The second best player, if you want to say it's Will Smith, you know, fourth overall, is 19. Throw William Eklund in there as among your best players right now with some proven ability at the NHL level. And what's William, 22? Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's the core of the best players that you have. Who is your best defenseman right now? That's up for debate. Who's your best forward after those three? That's up for debate. That's all still coming. So while the teardown of the high-priced talent is certainly complete, there's still a lot of moving parts here. And it just goes back to this whole rebuilding. It's really tough business. And along the way, you have to say goodbye to people you like and that you get emotionally invested in as fans, especially. And this is tough for the fans to understand. How could we trade Fabian Zetterlund? Because that's topic number one in the fan base today. But if you listen to Mike Greer and he said, well, I have a chance to get a third line center who's 21 right now, who I look as a guy who could be our Adam Lowry and be that piece and be that 6'4", 220 guy who's in the same age group or close to Macklin, Will, and Eklund. Well, that's the reason it happened.
So we're 20 million from the floor?
Yes.
How much McDavid going to cost?
Who?
Connor McDavid.
Oh. He said it, yeah, not the rest of us.
Yeah, but you'd only have him for 1 year.
Okay.
Drew, you perked up when I said that Mike Greer alluded to this being the last time that they'd be going through this.
Yeah.
Again, that to me makes it feel like there is a bigger plan at work. And I know I think that's the hardest thing right now to what Randy talked about. And even your point about Nico Sturm, you lose these guys, but it does feel like with all the draft capital he has, with all the space that he has financially, things are in motion. It may not be clear to us right now, but if you pull back, I mean, they have to be one way or another, right?
Yeah, that was, you know, when I was looking at all the guys going out and Nico and Jake and you know, you go back to Mackenzie, you start to wonder, well, what the hell are we doing? What is the plan here? Obviously, they don't consult us because we're just another friggin' observer. We're just broadcasters. You know, we're Jaffos. So, of course, they're not going to consult us and they're not going to call us on everything, say, this is why we did it. So listening to Mike today certainly alleviates many of the question marks about what we were wondering, or why did we let this guy go? Why did that guy go? So when he said that, and then, you know, Randy talking about the cap space they're going to have, and Mike saying that it's time to start building now, really building now, and adding players, NHL players, to the roster, then you go, okay, I can see that. Okay, I get that. But I agree with Randy. The number one topic would be Fabian. Fabian, 17 goals, and he's got a motor, and he's very likable and lovable. And you think about the relationship with Eklund and all those things. But that came together because a player became available that obviously our scouts have done the work. That our scouts have done the work as far as this is what we need. And Mike was right. You need to build down the middle. And if you watch any team, the Jets, the top teams, Colorado, Vegas, Florida, look at the Dallas, you look at the teams, they're huge. They're huge. You need a bunch of big, mean SOBs down the middle. And we don't have that yet. We're a small team still, and we're a young team. And we need people around our young, skilled players. So when you get a big 6'5", 225-pound guy who fought Matt Rempien Jr., you go, that's interesting. So I look at it and I think, yeah, let's, they've got a plan. We're just not privy to what it is every single day and every move.
And well, just, and I know Danny needs to get in here too, but you know, and Jake Wallman, also another near topic for Sharks fans today. Why are you trading him? And the price was too good. Think about the Sharks were given Jake Wallman. The Sharks
and a second
Jake
round
Wallman
pick.
And a second round pick that they used to take Wilanius, who's in the system right now. They got him and a number two for future considerations, which we know in the NHL means zero. It means nothing. It means some kind of favor down the line that doesn't involve money or a player or a draft pick. So we got those things for nothing and turned those things that we got for nothing into another first round draft pick. And that's amazing.
Dan, I wanted to ask you, Drew, actually jump in.
Oh, sorry, I want to jump in. But on the other hand, Randy, on that, there's a couple things to that. Mike has said before that just because he has first round picks or picks that he's not always going to use them to draft somebody.
No, it's draft capital. It's capital.
Capital. But the other aspect is from the fans' point of view, like you said right off the bat, it hurts. It still hurts.
Oh, no,
yeah.
I know.
And so it's hard to look at a pick down the road and not go, you know what I mean? It's that.
That might not be a pick. That pick might be bundled up in a deal to get a player, and all of a sudden everybody goes, oh, I know who he is, and I can't believe we got him, but it might cost a first-round pick to get him.
Yep, absolutely.
That's already started to happen, too. You know, in recent years, how did Askarov get here? Well, I mean, there was some movement with picks that were acquired. I think one of the interesting things about this right now, too, is they wanted to get a guy like Ostapchuk because they looked within their organization and they didn't have that. And that's an evaluation of a lot of the guys that are either playing in junior or playing for the San Jose Barracuda right now. And they've got to be asking themselves, what do I have to do to stick around? I think that the Calder Cup playoffs are going to be really important for those guys to showcase what they can do, especially in a best of seven situation against other men, players that they might be playing against in the NHL if they get here. And if it doesn't work here, it's also going to be draft capital or capital, that is, for Mike Greer to move some things around. You know, we've had a few guys that haven't even gotten here yet. I was kind of surprised to hear him talk about Cam Lund so openly to maybe say that they'd like to get him out of college hockey this year and sign him to a contract and get him going right away, that they're already thinking about that because they usually haven't tipped their hand in that regard. But you have other players like Havilland and Bisted who's playing for the Barracuda. What's their future going to be? What's going to be the capital that you get back from them if you don't keep them here? And I think that's going to be some of the interesting stories that happen here in the stretch drive of the season, including the guys like, for instance, Luca Cagnoni. Is he going to get a shot to play in the NHL now? I say probably yes before this season is over, just to kind of get prepared, get a taste of what it's like, and then get to the Calder Cup playoffs and do the best you can and try to win there. But we're going to see a lot of that in the next couple of weeks, and I don't think it's limited to any position. It's going to be fascinating.
Dan, I wanted to ask you, with the trades of all these veteran players, the Nico Sturm, the Luke Cunning in particular, veteran guys that were looked to be protection as well as a clear-cut pathway for Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith to look to, now that they have proven themselves to a small extent in the NHL, we're seeing consistent production from Celebrini and from Smith. Did that make Greer feel a little bit more comfortable in trading those veterans away to where he thought to himself, these guys get it now. They see how it's done. They maybe don't need these guys around them to the same extent. And maybe he wasn't looking at it that directly, but perhaps the fact that they flourished the way they have allowed him to have more freedom with who he wanted to move as he got to the deadline.
Well, I think that the key phrase that he said in his news conference was that you don't win the Stanley Cup with just Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith. You got to surround them with people. And I think there's a combination of things going on. I think that part of what you're saying is true, that they like the way these guys are developing and able to take more important roles with the team quicker at the NHL level for more numbers of games. I mean, when was the last time we heard anything about load management? I think it was about 15 games into the season for these guys, because they've shown that they can handle that part of it. What's interesting for me with Celebrini and Smith is they were not put on the roster for the San Jose Barracuda. Colin Graf and Mooka Mahdouin were, but the one possibility they've got is at the end of the season, they could get a call from their national team and go play in the World Championships. And I think that would be another step for their development to see exactly what they could do. I mean, Will Smith did it last year for Team USA. And I already know that that Macklin Celebrini has spoken to Team Canada over the year about a variety of topics. So, you know, he's clearly on both of those squads' radar, especially since the Sharks aren't going to the playoffs. But the other part of it, too, is you have to remember that the veteran players that are here, you know, you really are going to depend on Tyler Toffoli. Mario Ferraro, I know they heard some discussions about him. Mike said nothing was really enticing enough to actually make a move, and they really liked the player. So, I mean, these guys are going to be really important to continue to teach these guys and to provide support. But you also have to understand that players that have won before also are in a situation where they lose their enthusiasm. They could lose their enthusiasm if they're there for too long. So maybe there is going to be a little bit of a revolving door for some of these guys. I think Tyler Toffoli is maybe an exception to that, signing a 4-year deal. But his circumstances were a little bit different, and I think he understands the whole picture. But yet you start to see some of that. So that means you're bringing guys in that don't lose enthusiasm around February 15th and continue to provide that role for a team. And that's just something that each club has to evaluate. So I think it's a combination of the things that you said, their growth, the fact that you got good guys coming in that they feel are going to project very well, and plus you want to make sure that the veterans that you do have here continue to be that positive influence that you expect.
Danny, you use the term revolving door, and maybe this is just wishful thinking on my part, but some of these guys who are going out are unrestricted free agents at the end of this year. Uh-huh. Guys that were a particular guy, Nico Sturm, is a free agent at the end of this year.
Why am I surprised you brought him up?
I don't know. I just, just first guy that kind of popped into my head.
Sure.
But there is certainly a chance. So you're saying there's a chance that he could have the revolving door coming back and swinging back to 525 West Santa Clara.
Sure. Why not? Hey, by the way, I did want to report on this since you guys weren't there, but in Denver, it was a kind of a similar situation. I thought it was fascinating when the news came out in the morning that Nico got traded. Nico came down to the rink. He was already probably down there working out anyway.
Of course he was.
And I saw him walk out onto the bench, straight to Mike Aldrich, equipment manager of the team, put his arms around him, went up to Ryan Kelsey, went up to Will Leonard, all the trainers and all the guys came over. Not that dissimilar to when Blackwood got traded on the road, that every single guy went up to shake his hand before the bus departed for leaving Florida. And the other thing that was interesting, too, was to talk to Mackenzie Blackwood and to see him. I saw him come over out by the bench to talk to Celebrini and Smith, and they both commented on the Sharks Audio Network during our broadcast about how much they loved him. And one thing that McKenzie said to me was, he said, this organization and this general manager has a very good reputation for treating players right and for wanting to help them succeed. And that's going to be a good selling point for any veteran that wants to come in here, because look at who they've traded these guys to. Nico Sturm, Vitek Vanacek, backup goaltender, he's got a chance to be on a Stanley Cup championship team. Sturm, again, same thing. So, that's something that's a reputation that we've had here in San Jose for a number of years. But I really think that Blackwood's very positive comments about how much he likes the organization and loves San Jose is going to be a big selling point for anybody when they do decide to get aggressive over the summer here. And maybe, as you said, for the revolving door to spin and for a couple of guys to come back to SAP Center in a Sharks uniform.
Randy, you brought up the pain that fans are feeling. What about their patience levels? Because we have not been to the playoffs since the spring of 2019, although there is light at the end of the tunnel this year with the incredible development of both Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith. It's still another year in which we are at the deadline with 17 wins. It's going to be a tough ride to the finish. Are they going to be patient, provided that these young talents keep developing? Because we remember how it was not too long ago when every year the Sharks were in contention. It felt like that was never going to end. The fan base got used to it. And this has been a very distinct change to what was pretty much the history of contention for San Jose almost since day one. I mean, once that 93-94 team got in, it felt like every year the Sharks were clearly part of the conversation until this most recent run.
You're welcome, by the way.
Thank you, Drew.
Okay. Well, I can't speak for a fan base, but I will say this. There is a great reason to stay patient. There's two great reasons, and it's Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith. And I'll throw Eklund in there as well. They are three incredibly dynamic players. Macklin is the best 18-year-old player in the world. We hopefully have a goaltender that will be a goalie of the future. And then a lot of other pieces that are still in the we're not sure category. But patience, it varies from person to person. There were people who lost their patience when the Sharks couldn't get over the hump and win the Stanley Cup, even though they were in the playoffs every year. There's those fans who go like, I'm done with this. They didn't win the cup. I've lost my patience. So there's various levels, but I will still go back to what I said at the beginning of this year. And again, with the backdrop of today being as sad in some ways as it is because of the people that aren't with the Sharks anymore. If you have been off the bandwagon, if you lost patience some time ago, if you stopped going to the games, if you stopped watching and listening to the games, which would make me wonder why you're actually watching this. But if you're one of those people, this is the time to get back on board, because this is the fun stuff. This is the growing with the group. And I think that's part of the pain of today is people felt, well, we thought these guys were part of the group. We thought Sellerman was part of the group. We thought Wallman was part of the group, and now they're not part of the group. But that's the reality of trying to build it as Mike Greer is trying to do. And it's hard, and there's tough decisions that have to be made, but you have to have a 5-year plan, let's say, which is a reasonable amount of time for a general manager. That's the length of most of their contracts. So they have a 5-year plan of where they're trying to get to. And that's where the Sharks are. They're executing a plan. And unfortunately, some popular people fall by the wayside through the execution of that plan. But you can't lose sight of the plan, and you can't lose sight of the goal. And as Drew pointed out, you do have to deviate. You do have to make changes. You do have to correct some things that may not have worked out the way you wanted. But at the end of the day, Mike Greer had a vision for this job when he got it, for how he was going to get this team back. And I don't think he's wavered much from the ultimate vision of how he was going to do it. And this is part of how that's happening.
Drew, what is Ryan Warsawski saying to his coaching staff right now? Are they just kind of shrugging and saying, all right, we go from here? I mean, they just played, and I know this sounds a little bit absurd amidst a road trip that only had two wins, but I can make an argument they were playing their best hockey of the season. They tightened up defensively. Their coverage in all zones was better. They looked really motivated. That was the other thing. And then now, once again, you know, we talked about it's not just the X's and O's, it's the Jims and Joes. Well, the Jims and Joes are not the same that he had just a few days ago when he thought things were pointed in the right direction. So how is that conversation going right now?
Well, I'm a big believer in controllables, as you guys probably get tired of me talking about. As a coach, you can only, coaches coach, players play, managers manage. And that's what Dean Lombardi told us that in the very first meeting we had with all the scouts and the coaches in the first year. He said, listen, we're picking the team. You guys are going to coach them and they're going to play. So that helps you. It actually frees you into doing your job. And for the coaching staff, nothing will change as far as their approach to the game. They're not going to change any of the structure. They did change the structure coming out of the Four Nations break, more of a 1-3-1 in the neutral zone, more of a heavier on the forecheck. There's still, of course, the warts that they have, and they're continuing to try to work on that. For them, nothing changes. His messaging to the team, I doubt, will change as well. You will have those, as Mike Greer talked about, there'll be some guys that Mike will talk to tomorrow, some of the leadership guys, and I'm sure that Macklin will be in that conversations, and Eklund as well, is that he'll have individual conversations with guys. And I'm sure Ryan will do the same thing with some individuals. Tyler would be one of the ones, one guy you talk to when you go out there, and you talk to, you know, pretty much anybody you can that you can help you get the guys going in the right direction and focus on the controllables. And the other thing is, all right, it's all over with. Now just go out and play. You guys have done what you just said, Ted. You guys in this last road trip, you played your asses off against some really good teams that were either in a playoff hunt or in the playoffs and needing the 2 points to rise up in the standings. And you played your asses off. And if we could have got a break here and there, you would have came with that road trip with a winning record. But we didn't get those breaks because this, that, and that happened. We're trying to fix those on the ice, and that's what we're going to do. And you try to get them excited if you can for these last 18 games. Give me something, give me a player with something to prove. Give me a player with a chip on his shoulder. Give me a player who's being doubted, and I'll put him on my team any day of the week. And I will go to my guys and say, hey, this is what is in front of you. This is what the carrot is dangling in front of you. This is why you need to work on these next 18 games like this. You can't let that guy beside you down. You can't let that guy beside you down. You can't let the guy across the room beside you down or across from you down. You have a responsibility as a player to play your ass off now. And you have those conversations. Sometimes it's going to be with everybody. Because there's very little times in a coaching, when you're coaching, that you have the big rah-rah speech. Tomorrow I might give one. I would have some individual conversations first with some key guys. And tomorrow I might give one if I was Ryan Warsawski. I probably would. So that's what you do. You don't deviate from what you've been doing because you don't need to. You're on the right track as far as your plan and trying to move forward with your guys. But you would deviate some of the conversations you're going to have tomorrow versus what you would have on a quote-unquote normal game day.
Final question to all three of you, and Randy, I'll start with you. What are your expectations for these final 18 games?
You know what? What Ryan Warsawski's expectation was going into the season, and I think for the most part, and especially lately, the Sharks have gotten there, and that's to, be respected again, not be the doormat. And even though 32nd is last, it's a different feel. Be competitive every night and have the respect of your opponents. And it's going to be tough. I mean, especially when the Sharks are going up against teams that are, if not in the playoff situation or in the mix, are elite. I mean, they've got Washington coming. They've got Carolina, although I don't know what's going on there. Wow. They've got Toronto coming. They've got the Rangers resurgent coming. They've got Edmonton twice. Coming. And that's not to mention some tough road games as
LA.
Well. So they're going to face a lot of tough teams. They're going to face a lot of teams that are already, if not in playoff mode, awfully close, gearing up. And we're already starting to see it around the league. It's getting harder and harder, and the games are getting more competitive, and fights are happening that weren't happening earlier in the season because the battle is on. So I want the Sharks to stick their nose in, be in the middle of the battle. I think on nights when it's a battle, I think Macklin Celebrini will feel a lot better about it when 6'7" Vinny Desharnais on the ice, if you know what I mean. It's going to be easier to be in some of those battles, and maybe he won't get shoved around by a Lowry like he did in Winnipeg. But I just want them to compete and battle. But if we're expecting the Sharks to go on some sort of a run here, I don't know. That would be great. But if they can compete, like Drew talked about on this road trip, and find their game and stay, I think they found their game actually. And keep that going. And last night was, I don't think last night against Colorado counts because of everything that was going down off the ice. It's almost like I erased that game from the road trip. It's not fair to compare the rest of the road trip to that game last night. But keep playing like that, and that's all we can hope for. And you know what? As Greer said, we're going to see some players that we haven't seen yet. whether it's Cagnoni or whoever else it is that comes up from the Barracuda or elsewhere. Hopefully something special happens there as well. That's what we hope for as broadcasters, because we want to tell good stories.
Dan, what are your expectations for these final 18 games?
Well, I want to remember the fact that these guys have made a big investment in their lives when they were very, very young. And since they've joined the San Jose Sharks, they've made a big investment in each other. And they want a return on that investment. And the return on that investment might not, for some of them, end up by staying with the San Jose Sharks. But what they're building is what both Randy and Drew are talking about. The fact that they're respected as National Hockey League players. That's not just a team. That's just not the way that the Sharks play. That's part of it. But it's about every individual in that dressing room. And they've got to make sure that they're also upticking the respect for them in this situation. I think we've largely seen that because of the job that the coaching staff has done, the management has done, to get the right type of people in here surrounding these good, young, talented players, and there's more coming. But to me, I'd like to see that. I want to make sure that these players don't forget about the investment and don't squander the investment that they've made, because they're already starting to see some returns personally on how they're thought of as players, how they're respected around the league, and also how they're going to become better themselves. And, you know, I think it's take care of your body, make sure that you're always there to work, that you come with a smile on your face, that you don't forget that, in the words of the great Igor Larionov, you don't work hockey, you play hockey. You have to enjoy it. And make sure that you give your absolute best. And that's all anybody ever really asks. And I think that the fan base understands that. Sharks fans have always been a type of fan base that says, we want you to give the best effort that you have out there. And if you do that, we'll respect you. And I think that that's going to happen on this stretch of the season. There are going to be some ups and there are going to be some downs. There may be more downs than ups, and that's probably the prediction that most people will make. But I think there are going to be some surprises in there. And I think we're going to see some great shining moments during the course of this time that are going to get us really excited, not only about the future, but also about what has been accomplished this year. They can't let that go. They have to make sure that this season finishes out with a return on that investment that they've put into themselves and their careers.
Drew, bring us home. Your expectations for these final 18 games.
Well, let's be real. They're not going to win a lot of them, right? I mean, they're not. It's just the way the season has gone. You would have to think, well, it's not going to change that much since you took talented personnel out. But going back to what both Randy and Danny said, I guess we've all kind of got what we want to see versus what we think we'll see. And we know, as far as wins and losses, it will probably be tilted heavily in the loss department. But I'm with the guys, and you know, I want to see them work and compete. Difference between work ethic and competing. I want to see them keep that compete level that they've had. I want to see them play for each other. I want to see the guys that are coming in that we haven't seen before coming up and getting the opportunity. I want to see them rise to the occasion. I want to see them play as hard as they played on this road trip these next 18 games. I want to see them care as much as our fans care. And we've seen that for the most part this year. There's been very few games where you look at them and go, like last night, and go, what's that? And I think Randy's right. I mean, Ryan Warsawski said it after last night's game. They're human, after all. There is a human element to this. But I want to see them compete as hard as they can. I want to see them play for each other. I want to see them play for the fans. I want to see them, no matter what the score is, that they are giving you everything they got, that they're maxing out on every shift. Yes, they're going to be outmanned. Yes, they're going to be out-talented. But overall, I want to see them be there step for step, being, as Randy said, hard team to play against, the respect of the opposition, and the game's over. You go into the other team's dressing room and they go, damn, they're hard to play against. Even at this situation, even at this point of the year, they're hard to play against. And as Danny said, our fans, being as knowledgeable as they are, they'll respect that. And that will give everybody some hope going into next year and going, okay, there are some building blocks there. Yes, they had to deviate, but there are some building blocks there that we can look forward to next year, and then come out and watch the CUDA go in the playoffs.
All right, gentlemen. Well, thank you so much for your time. Now we've got nothing but games at home until the final game of the month, but that's still in California. So you don't have to go anywhere for a long, long time. All right, guys, have a good one.
Thanks, Dad. Thanks, boys.
A big thanks to Randy Hahn, Drew Menda, and Dan Ruzanowski for joining me to discuss everything that we had just seen go down with the San Jose Sharks in the last roughly 36 hours. Stay tuned to the Sharks Audio Network for the latest San Jose Sharks news as it comes in. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Rainey signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yen.